Welcome to the Wellness Renaissance Podcast, exploring topics to help you find the pieces that fit into your health puzzle.
I am a mom with no specialist after my name. I'm not here because I'm an educator or I'm a doctor or I'm a specialist or I've received special training or any of that. I have a desire to do the best I can for my kids. Yeah, I don't have to shout. Right. The doctor says, well, whatever, and I can interrupt her and go, oh, I'm not comfortable with that. Can we talk about some other options? Right. As calmly and civilly as that. Mm-hmm. And so I never raise my voice. I never swear at anybody. I mean, but it's just like, this is what it is. This is the last word. Right. So what you need to say, but this is the last word. That takes confidence. And I think every single time your child sees you stand up for their body autonomy, it's practice. And then when they get to be the age, they can do it. Mm-hmm. And a child who can say, you can't do that to me because it makes me uncomfortable, is a safer child.
That was Natalie Clark. And as you hear from her introduction, she is a mom. Natalie and I were in college together and had some commonalities throughout our college experience. I hadn't seen her for quite a long time, multiple years, and ran into her at a party that I was at, and we had this fantastic conversation about parenting and navigating school systems and medical systems and so many other great things. And I asked her to come on the podcast because much of our conversation that we had before we recorded this and while we recorded this are things that I hear parents struggling with. I hear people who work with kids struggling with, people trying to navigate the systems themselves. There's a lot in here just for anybody, whether you have kids or not. One of Natalie's children is a non-verbal child, so that adds a whole additional layer to her experience of becoming a parent, raising that child and her other child slash soon-to-be children, and navigating life and the systems, right? This podcast is a little bit longer than normal and what I shoot for, but you know what? We had, like I said, a really great conversation, and I had so many things that I just didn't want to leave on the quote-unquote editing room floor. And there's more that's in the closet that we're not putting out there. Who knows? Maybe we will someday. But there was just a lot of really good information, and my job that I feel, what I'm trying to do with my podcast, I am trying to get information out there. And I just didn't want to leave things behind that I just felt were really important, that I have heard parents, non-parents, people who work with kids, struggle with or want to talk about a little bit more. So I divided it up a little bit. We have our basic conversation, and then at the end, I added some nuggets that actually came out of me letting the recorder run, and Natalie and I continued to talk after we sort of tied things up, and some really great, important suggestions came out of that. So I've kind of attached those snippets sort of out of context at the end. I hope you have as much fun listening to this interview as I did doing it, because for the record, I don't have kids, but this whole conversation was a blast to be. And if you ever get a chance to hang out with Natalie, I highly suggest it. It's definitely a good time. As you will hear for yourself shortly, Natalie is smart, she's witty, she is naturally funny, and a little sassy. Maybe a lot sassy. Nonetheless, our time flew by while we were together. So let's head on into the conversation so you can enjoy it too. I have Natalie Clark with me, who is a mom. We've had a few moms on the show before, but they haven't been only defined as mom. So that's cool. I certainly see parents struggling, dealing with the medical system, dealing with the school system. Yeah. I remember my parents struggling. Let's just dive into a conversation about that and how you handle that, how you approach that.
Sure. I think what's the most interesting about all of this is that I had my own health crisis before I had my children. And I've got a chronic pain condition, and sort of dealing with doctors and wanting them to be this expert that you go to, and they're sympathetic to your situation and they're interested in helping you and they'll want to do whatever it takes. And finding out that that wasn't always the case, probably informed my parenting style ahead of time. When it became clear that my oldest child, my daughter, was not verbal, and that's a funny thing to say because she is so verbal, but none of it is what English, right? She's speaking a very advanced language that I do not understand, much to her dismay. But it was like, okay, so there's maybe a couple of things going on here, and deciding to get her pediatrician involved and deciding to look into what resources were available to her and I, and discovering that questions about, okay, so maybe my child's situation is not typical, that a lot of people treated you like you were getting out of the driver's seat of parenting and letting them climb in and drive away. And it was less a discussion and more of a, you tell me what to do for my kid and we'll do that. And it's just raised by a very strong woman and not really a fan of being told what to do. Not really a fan of someone coming into a situation as an outsider, giving me a couple of minutes, maybe two questions, and then telling me they know exactly what to do and giving me orders rather than these are my suggestions based on my knowledge base and my understanding of what you're saying. And so really immediately, I realized that my role as a mom in those instances was so much more advocate than it just was that I had given birth to her, and that it was my job to stand between her and everybody and make sure that whatever any expert or whatever sort of fancy word they wanted to call themselves had to say or knew, in quotes, was the right thing for her, that I was going to listen, take that in, get as much additional information as I could, and make the determination for her as her mom. No one else was going to do that, and no one else was going to make sure that what they were saying was actually applicable and not just to the, you know, 10 to 15 minute window they get to see her at the doctor's office, where no kid is themselves at the doctor's office, and she is maybe least of all herself at the doctor's office. And so, you know, I know her. I know her better than anyone does, and I need to take the information and take a good look at it and decide whether or not I think it actually applies and the best way to apply it or try it if we're even going to. So that became my job. I'm often read as younger than I am. I'm not entirely sure why that is, but that became an immediate hurdle. Because like, mom comes in and they perceive you as young. I have a lot of visible tattoos, so they make an assumption about my knowledge base typically. And so there I was sort of realizing I had to arm myself with as much knowledge as I could and just be as firm and assertive as I could, because while she is so young, while she's my, you know, my minor, I make her medical decisions for her. And so I was, in fact, the boss a lot more than anyone wanted me to know. The more I got I don't even want to say a recommendation, because oftentimes they were not stated that way. The more times I would give it was given medical advice and I would counter or disagree, the tone changed pretty quickly. But I found when I stuck to my guns, I was where the buck stopped, and I could say, I hear what you're saying, I don't agree, or I hear what you're saying, I'm not comfortable with that like course of treatment or whatever. And I was in fact the boss, even though no one wanted me to know that. And they weren't necessarily pleased when I figured it out. But yes, I think that's been my approach, and I took it from the doctor's office to the school, because they see a doctor, I mean, the minute they're born, but for a very long time before they get into a school building. And so I just took the same attitude from the doctor's office into the school with, okay, you're the teacher, that's great. Or you're the special ed specialist, that's great. But I know my kid, I am the Fiona specialist. So you and I may compare notes and we will find the best way to meet her needs. And you might not get all of your way, and that's just how it's going to go. So the better terms we can be on that, but I like to make myself very clear up front I find that is the best way to go. You have to really walk in no nonsense and as bossy as you could possibly make yourself be. And then it is, in fact, so much easier than trying to correct a misperception later that, oh, yeah, we just tell her what to do and then she's going to get it done. Mm-hmm. And I know when I walk in, I see the looks on their faces of, ah, yes, that's not how this works. We make suggestions to Natalie or recommendations or say, have you ever thought about trying? Because I'm the boss.
Right.
And that's kind of how it goes.
Well, and it... Yeah, it is, I'm sure, from their perspective. It's like, okay, I've got all this experience and this book knowledge as well as experience, which is
yes.
totally valuable.
Yes.
I mean, nobody's saying that isn't valuable.
Right.
But, yeah, if it's not a partnership where you get the final say, it is your kid, you
right.
have to live with the outcomes
right.
and the
and
consequences.
You're responsible for them. The shape of their childhood, the treatments they receive or don't receive, the way they are maneuvered through the school system will stay with them. It's their childhood. It's the story of how they were raised. And so you have to be as in charge of it as you can to make sure that story is as positive as you can make it. They could say, my teachers didn't always get me, or the school never really tried to understand me, but my mom was right there every minute making sure everyone was doing what they were supposed to do. And I don't want to make it seem like it's a bunch of teachers and doctors sitting around trying to control children and trying to dismiss parents. I think what really struck me was meeting so many specialists who, when I came informed. I came having done my research. I came with the, I'm here for a recommendation and not, you're not in charge here. I'm in charge here and you can, and I can work together. Sometimes even in the, oh, she's going to be more work than my other people is relief.
Mm-hmm.
That so many times parents are coming to them so overwhelmed and so, maybe disheartened at the amount of information that is available to someone whose child has or apparently has special needs, and they just want someone to take over.
Right.
And they're not maybe, or they're just checked out and not doing the advocating, or they're mourning. I think that's really important.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of parents have to go through a process of, okay, maybe I had a picture of what my child's life was going to look like, and now it's not going to look like that. And I think it's important that they be allowed to have that conversation, but I think sometimes you're getting parents who don't have a lot of support, who then are going through that mourning process and are willing and desirous of someone to take over for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know a lot of the specialists at school will just tell me what I should do, because that's what a lot of the parents are waiting to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Just tell me what will help. Just tell me what to do, when to do it, how to do it, and I will do whatever you say, and I'm just hoping it will help my kid. And if that worked for your family, if you don't have the support, if you don't have the fight in you, and that's somebody then is looking out for, ultimately, for what's best for your kid, but yeah, I think ideally it's always the parents. It's the ones raising them, right? So maybe say guardians or whoever it is that has their primary care. You want to say, I get that sometimes you are just, this is all dumped on you and you're the specialist, you figure it out, but that's not what's going to happen here. And I, you know, have to begin a dialogue with them that's like, this is a conversation and I'm in charge here and I'm happy to be, I'm 100% in the driver's seat. I'm going to make sure that she has absolutely everything that she needs. So help me, but never forget that you're not driving.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, and I can imagine that, yeah, like you say, there's probably in some cases, there's a certain amount of relief in certain cases because they don't have to make this decision. It doesn't have to, in a
yeah.
sense, weigh on them.
And they want it to be the parents. It's like, yes, yes, you are the expert on your child. You know them better than anything. If I say to you, I really think that Fiona needs this, I hear that and I say, yeah, I see why you think that, but here are the reasons why this isn't going to work because I know her. And then it's, oh, we've saved 4 months of trial and error,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
they know I am invested in her and I am, you know, they want to use me as the expert on my kid. They want that. it's like, okay, I want to ask you these questions. I want to see if you think this will work. And if we can bypass these four things that would take us forever to try, because you know that they're not going to work, then that's great. So right. there is, I mean, it's complicated. Mm-hmm. It's very complicated. I know a lot of, it's just like anything else, right? Why are the people at the DMV not very nice? Well, they deal with a lot of not very nice customers.
Right.
So you're dealing with someone who's gotten yelled at a bunch for government processes that have nothing to do with them. They're just there to take your check and take your picture. And so you have this system that feeds itself. Right. So now the DMV worker is grumpy all the time. Well, they have good reasons to be grumpy all the time. But the one happy face they see that's not impressed with that wants to complain. Do you know what I mean? So I am the squeaky wheel going, quit being the boss of me. And they're like, no, we're happy you're here. Be quiet. Be the boss. It's fine. So I get it. And there's plenty of that.
Well, it's easier to a certain extent.
Yeah.
They're overworked too.
Yeah.
And it is easier to be in control. It's a lot easier to just say, you go to this, you go to this,
absolutely.
And you go to this.
And listen to what I say. And then on the opposite side of that, there are plenty of people who really love that. No, I am right. the expert. And you will listen to what I said. I had to fire Fiona's first pediatrician for being the kind of person who did not appreciate my counteroffers. Or when I said, well, that's nice, but we're not going to do that. I will do some research and I will figure out another way to handle this particular problem. She did not appreciate me not
acquiescing
to her expertise. And so that'll be part of it. You're going to come across teachers or educators or specialists, doctors that you can say, you're not the boss of me, and they will disagree.
Right.
And I think that can be really frustrating in that moment, especially if you're a person who has much less like higher education than they do. It can feel very squashing, and you can feel like, okay, maybe they're right. Maybe I don't know what I'm talking about. Maybe I just need to be quiet. It's very easy for them to act like ignoring their advice is bad for your child and not doing the best for your child, because obviously their advice is the best thing ever. But it's just like anything else. There are way more doctors than a city ever needs in a city, because not every doctor is for every patient.
Right.
And that goes, you know, you wouldn't allow, hopefully, you wouldn't allow your own doctor to speak to you in a way that you didn't find respectful, or to only administer medical advice to you in a way that you didn't felt actually listened to you or had your best interest at heart. And so you have to be that way with your child's pediatrician. You have to be their voice. I mean, in my case, I literally am her voice, but you have to feel that same way. I don't know that you're really get my kid, or you're not listening to the way we approach medicine and respecting whatever the difference might be. Like, when they're very small, the vaccination schedule is really intense, and it's a lot of shots every appointment for a whole bunch of months in a row. Now, people feel a lot of ways about vaccination, and I'm not saying do it or don't do it or whatever speaks to your soul, but my response to how many shots they wanted to give my child at a time was to say, that's not happening. Mm-hmm. like, okay, so first offer was four or five vaccinations. They were combined, some of them. But it's just immediately uncomfortable. Her body was too small, and she had a tendency to get sick easily. Not seriously sick, but to get a fever and to be uncomfortable. And I thought, that's too many shots at one time. How about we do this many today, and I will come back in a week or two and we can do the rest. And just the look on my doctor's face of complete surprise, not in a bad way. Uh-huh. This was her new pediatrician. The look of, oh, absolutely. It's just like, this is, in her opinion, this was the time frame in which these vaccinations should be given. And so to move it, to stretch it out over a couple of weeks was absolutely no problem at all. And then my daughter got all of the vaccinations she needed for me and her doctor to feel like she was being medically protected. And it was never so much at a time that she got sick, had to have a fever, or had to have any sort of negative result from it. So all it said was, yeah, that's too much at one time. How can we amend this schedule to be easier on her, not overwhelm her little body, not make her sick for 4 days in a row. And it was like, absolutely.
And
absolutely,
it's,
we can do that.
That's so cool that the doctor was responsive mm-hmm. to that. And it, I think it is kind of, we get in this mindset of doctor knows all, and we don't even think sometimes of, you think in your mind, I don't like how this is going, but you don't even necessarily think of problem solving it.
Right.
Because A, you don't sometimes have enough time to think about it while you're sitting in the office.
Absolutely. Or you immediately are thinking about the number of needles and
right.
how upset your kid's going to be and
right.
how upset that makes you as a parent.
Yeah. And you don't even get to the point of thinking, well, wait a minute, we could just spread this out. Like,
absolutely.
This is a doable thing. And I think that is, I think it's a great point that you bring up of just be able to sit back when you're, you know, you get an instruction for the doctor. Well, wait a minute, I need a few minutes to think about this, if not more than a few minutes.
Right.
And then to be able to kind of get over the to have the internal power to say, no, can we do this differently? Because you're not saying, hey, doctor, I'm not doing that. You're not saying, I don't want to do what you're just saying.
Absolutely.
I need to do this in a more... You were the first person that I have heard has ever done that. But I'm thinking, I've heard many parents who have said, oh my gosh, I can't believe they're going to put this much stuff in my kid's system at one time.
Absolutely. And I know plenty of children who've gotten really sick for a long time and deal with high fever and just lethargy and how sore the arm or leg is, whatever they're giving the medicine in. Yeah, it's just say the doctor's not necessarily going to have the time to say for every recommendation, there are options. Here are all your available options. So I think it's the biggest thing is listening to that voice in your head that heard that and went, yikes, that sounds like a lot of medicine, and say, okay, is there another way to do this? Do we have some options here? Because that sounds like a lot. My initial reaction to that is too much medicine for her tiny body to handle. And that maybe giving her all of that to process at once is going to completely overwhelm her. And just, it's just a question, right? Mm-hmm. So any decent quality doctor should be comfortable with questions. And you're not saying, that's not happening, what are we doing instead? But instead, a sort of, okay, so this is my reaction. Are there multiple options here that you're comfortable with as the doctor?
Right.
Not that you have to stay within their comfort level, but that part's good to know too. How do you feel if I say, ooh, that's too many needles? That kind of a thing. But yeah, if she just was like, that's perfectly reasonable. And that week or two that we took between vaccinations, she was completely fine again. She had, it had almost no impact on her other than the actual injection process. We went home that night. She was fine. She never spiked a fever. She never seemed uncomfortable. And the whole thing went down so much easier, where earlier appointments when she was younger and we had the previous pediatrician, she'd be out for a couple of days, just not herself.
Wow.
Just not herself. Just
right.
running a fever and obviously doing a lot of work. I mean, vaccinations do a lot of important work, but that's, I mean, you know, we have a hard time getting the flu shot as adults sometimes, and their bodies are just so small.
Right, yeah.
And so for the whole process to make her just as healthy and protect her just as much without the negative impact, I have to believe there's a less of a negative connotation with the doctor at that point too, right? Their little bodies know they went to the doctor and they were sick for a week afterward. You don't go to the doctor to get sick. You go to the doctor to feel better. And so the hope is that on top of it just being better for her, easier on her, that maybe she does not associate then the doctor with this overwhelming,
icky
I feel
feeling.
Awful for days afterwards, and mom can't hardly do anything about it.
Right. Well, that's
kind of
a thing when you're so little and you don't have, like, you don't have the tools and the space to be like, well, I feel crappy. I guess I'll just, you know, what do you do when you're a little tiny being who's just like, help me, I'm
exactly,
miserable.
Exactly, exactly.
You know?
Especially at ages where their speech is limited or not existent, you can be explaining it to them.
And they're
well, honey, the problem is, buddy right now is learning how to fight off smallpox. It's very important. And they have no idea what you're talking about, and they don't care. They know that they're too hot, and it hurts, and they're uncomfortable, and they want to sleep, but they can't. And the person who fixes it for them is just staring at them, crying themselves.
Right.
Or looking hopeless, or just smiling and hoping that helps. And Oh, being a parent, yeah. It's just being, like, laid down on the floor and told you can't move, and then all of this terrible stuff happens. You're like, yep, this is the feeling. Complete powerlessness, that's the feeling. Yeah.
I'm kind of surprised that that isn't an option, that isn't given more often.
Right. Eventually, when we talked about it a little bit, I know that it had something to do with, like, insurance, because some families do need to have them all done during the well-child appointments, so that they're not paying for an additional visit. Right? Oh, you love the fine print and that kind of thing. Yeah. And so, you know, it's important to know. It's just important to be informed. Yeah, a lot of times it's just, these are the vaccinations your kid needs. You're here now.
We'll just do it. It's all convenience.
Do it right now. It's a lot convenience. And it's convenience for the doctors and for the parents. But ultimately, if you're the one who's going to stay home with your kid who's sick for 3 days because of their overwhelmed system, that's not convenient. And where does your child's best interest fall in the realm of convenience?
Right.
So if it's possible to do it a better way, let's ask the questions. And let's know that. Let's get it all out on the table here. What's possible? What's possible today to make this less of an impact on my child? And just run through the options. It's only going to take a couple extra minutes. They can have the nurse walk you through that part if that's what's necessary. But it, you know, it's as big as that and as little as that. Just asking more questions. I hear what you want to do, and I'm okay with the basic concept or not.
Right.
And this is my issue, and what else can we possibly do? And for the most part, with a doctor that I have a lot of respect for, there's almost nothing where we have come to an impasse, where my concerns or my feelings or my knowing about what's going to be most successful for Fiona has not been the most important thing and has not helped us arrive at a solution I felt much more comfortable and that I felt just went much better for her. But yeah, just it's questions. It's feeling confident that you're allowed to ask questions, that even if someone looks at you like you're the trouble parent or you're so much more work, the other parents just say yes, okay, and then we do it. Ultimately, it's worth it. It's 1,000% worth it.
Right.
Because you're, you know, you got your kid where they needed to go.
Right.
You and looked out for them.
Doing right by the kid.
Yeah.
Which, again, is a cool thing to have to see in your parent.
Yeah.
As a growing child to see somebody thinking about that and not just saying, yes, doctor, whatever you want, but saying, asking those questions and teaching them to be a self, you're teaching them to be a self-advocate when they get old enough, but modeling that for them is such a great thing. And you, like you're saying, you can totally do it with respect.
Absolutely.
You know.
And I advocate for that. And I mean, you know, personal style is personal style. And the more respect I get from the professional, the more I do give back. But yeah, I think we want, as parents for the most part, we want children who are going to speak up when something doesn't feel right or when a situation feels wrong or uncomfortable or unsafe for them. And the sooner they can see us modeling that behavior and not just say, stand up to your teacher if they ever say something to you that, you know, feels so wrong, rather than having them in the room where you say, I'm not comfortable with what you're talking about. I'm not comfortable with this course of treatment. I don't feel it's best for my kid. Let's talk through other options and let's come to an agreement on something we both feel comfortable about. It's not just telling them what to do. It's showing them how you do it.
Right.
It's giving them the words. It's showing your calm demeanor. It's saying, I'm in charge here, and I'm going to behave that way. I'm going to make sure my kid's okay. I'm going to make sure I'm okay. And what an awesome thing to give your kid.
Yes.
And I think children who have behavior modeled for them are hugely more likely to exhibit that behavior later than kids who are just told what to do without that example given. Because it's not easy.
Right.
I will not say it's ever been easy to be the mom in the room staring down the specialist. It's never been easy. And you, even if your voice shakes, even if you feel silly, even if your face turns bright red, and you know, you have to get in your most, darn it, I'm in charge here, you know, whatever it is. If you feel like you sounded ridiculous afterwards, if you, you know, if you have to practice in a mirror, whatever it is, it's so worth it. It's so 100% worth it to have demonstrated that for your child, for your child to see not only that you value that, but the trust it creates between the two of you.
Yes.
That they're not going to go into a doctor's office where you're in charge every minute until the doctor walks in and then the doctor's in charge.
Right.
And if the doctor says something and you look at your mom and say, that sounds too scary or I can't do that, that your parent's going to go, oh, well, the doctor said it, so
yes.
That's sorry. That she knows 100% of the time, no matter who is talking, if it's her doctor, her teacher, her principal, my mother, anybody, there's nobody between her, like her and mom, that we're the unit and I'm there every minute. Right. And if there's ever anything wrong, I'm there every minute. And I give nobody the authority over her that is more important than mine. And no one's allowed access to her or whatever that I don't say is okay. And I really feel like a lot of the success that she and I have seen in going through her journey is that she knows that. She knows 100% of the time, mom has got me and I'm
right.
Totally safe. And we can go see whoever, whatever special, we've taken her all over the place, had all kinds of appointments, and she's always totally comfortable.
Wow.
Never has a freak out, never, I mean, sometimes I don't like it in this room or whatever,
right.
But she, the fear I see in some children's face in the waiting room, I just never see in hers.
Yep, that'd be me.
Sure, if you don't know what's coming and,
yeah.
And you don't know that the person who brought you is going to say, okay, she's scared, stop everything that's going on, let's talk through what's happening, let's see if we can make a change. But she knows. I believe 100% that she knows that I'm right there and that nothing's going to happen if I don't say it's okay. And that's...
That's a pretty big deal.
It's huge.
And it
it's
gives
huge.
Her so much value, too. You know,
I hope so.
That
I hope so. Especially as a nonverbal person.
Right.
I fear for her how much of our world revolves around saying no, and we teach our children it's okay to say no, ways to say no, how people have to value your no. Well, what if you don't have the word no?
Mm-hmm.
And it does scare the life out of me on a regular basis. And so as much as I've been able to do for her self-confidence wise and just her sense of I am in charge of myself, I mean, she's encouraged to, if someone is trying to touch her, hug her, or is too close to her, that she puts her hand on them and moves them away. And if they don't listen, she's allowed to shove. That's her no. And if she has to escalate that because they're not listening to her, it's the same as starting to shout because someone's not listening to what you're saying. And so we've had to talk about it at her preschool and in other, like, childcare settings where it's like, well, she pushed another kid. It's like, well, that's her no.
What happened before that?
Exactly. I would like to meet this child, and I would like to know what was happening before that, because she's not a shover. She never has been. But I can guarantee that whoever that child was not listening or never bothered to understand what she was trying to say and was not respecting her space. And so I've got no problems with her shoving a kid who cannot stop touching her or cannot give her the space that she needs to feel comfortable or space. Yeah, girl, shove them away.
That's a
and then
yikes.
Go find somebody who will help you be safe. So
yeah,
you have to...
Yeah, exactly.
I want her to have that trust.
Wow.
I want her to have that sense of mom's got my back no matter what, so that she feels like she is someone who can, if that makes sense.
Right. And what? How old is she now?
She's four. She'll
four.
Be five
okay,
in October.
So, yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that has to take a whole different complex parenting thought process
everything.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to be a mom. I thought about it so much before I got pregnant, and then you realize you're looking at problems that never even occurred to you.
Right.
Or like things to solve, and you're like, wow. You know, I thought to myself, I will never make my children hug someone to spare their feelings. That hug your uncle, you're making him sad. It just makes my skin crawl.
Mm-hmm.
We say we want a consent culture. We want our children to say no means no or don't do that. We want them to stand up to strangers or their teacher or somebody and say, don't touch me like that. I'm not comfortable like that. But from the very beginning of their life, we teach them you have to hug and kiss grandma. You have to hug and kiss your aunts and uncles and whoever I say. And then if you don't, they're allowed to pout and make the child feel bad about that.
Yeah.
And what you're saying with your words is you're in charge of your body, and what you're saying with your actions is I'm in charge of your body and other people's emotions are in charge of your body, mm-hmm. which is scary. Mm-hmm. Super, super scary and dangerous.
Yes, it is.
And so I always thought, oh, I will be the parent who says, no, you don't have to hug anybody you don't want to. And you say, no, Grandma, I'm not kissing you today because I don't feel like it. And then you go, oh, my kid doesn't talk. How is she going to somehow get someone to understand, no, I will not hug you because I don't feel like hugging you today. And you're trying to tackle a problem that was nowhere near your radar right. the entire time you were a young feminist preparing to have children. And she's like, well, damn it.
Now we've got to do this totally differently.
All right, I'm going to make you cards and you will hold them up and they will say, back off, because my mom said so. Yeah. So we just, you know, we kind of come at it from different places.
Yeah, wow. Well,
yeah.
Well, I just think your point is so valid about the whole consent culture. And then we wonder why our daughters and sons do the things they do when they get into relationships.
Exactly.
And it's like, they've always had the person telling them to take care of yourself, telling them, yeah, go kiss grandma.
Exactly. Or why didn't you tell him no? Well, I did, Mom, and he acted really sad.
Right, exactly.
So I felt uncomfortable and did it anyway. Totally. And you go, oh, does your brain go back to all those Thanksgivings where the kid looked at you like, I don't want to hug her, and you do it or else she'll be sad.
Right.
It's like what you taught them was that someone else's ability to be sad you won't give them affection is more important than their physical comfort. That whatever they practice sticks. Mm-hmm. So if that's what you've taught them in practice, that's what's going to stick. To then expect when they turn 18 and they go out on their own, I said no, he got sad, and I went, well, guess what, sad boy, now you can get out of my house, is not reasonable. It's not reasonable. You're expecting your child to come up with this self-esteem and self-worth that you never fostered in them.
Yes.
And while some amazing children are capable of that, they are the beautiful exception. They're not the rule. What we are taught is what sticks. Well, I'm allowed to be in charge of my body unless someone tries to emotionally manipulate me, and then I should probably just give them what they want.
Mm-hmm.
That's rape culture right there, and we set them up for it. And this is boys and girls both.
Yes,
everybody.
Yes,
if your body is less important than someone else's emotions, that's rape culture. Because you should, I don't care who you make sad with your refusal to give hugs, and I'm not a hugger for the most part, and I don't, and I, oh no thanks, high five, that kind of thing. And yes, so people give me bummed out faces all day and I just collect them. Yeah, save me your bummed out face, because that's really creepy and manipulative. And if we had a conversation about it for about 10 minutes about what you just did, you'd feel sick to your stomach. I hope.
Well, and we do have the, well, you're 18, don't you know any better? Well,
how would you?
I don't have the software. The software I was trained on was this software. And I never had the new software loaded because it doesn't work that way.
Talk about a light bulb moment. How about talking about, do you know the differences between a college student and a high school student? 3 months.
Oh, true.
That's
right.
It.
Right.
3 months. Sometimes they're not even the next year older. That's just it.
Right.
And suddenly they're entirely in charge of a life where, if they were really lucky before that, someone was making a breakfast and cleaning their room and doing their laundry. Right? We call those kids spoiled. I happen to think it's kind of rad if someone loved you enough to do all that kind of stuff for you. Call it what you want. But I mean, it's insane. The idea that, oh yeah, they became 18 and we viewed them as a legal adult, but no one showed up with their new manual.
Yes.
But that so applies to parenting.
Right. Right? Right?
And I think it's this idea that you have that parents like get, they wake up and like the parent fairy comes down and blesses them with the knowledge, and you're like, yes, I know how to be a parent now. And then you get pregnant, or you adopt and someone hands you your baby, or however it happens for you if you're lucky enough to do it because you want to do it. And you go, oh man, a parent and a non-parent, is the only difference is a baby.
Right.
Literally the only difference.
And it's a, one moment, well, yeah, and like, you leave the house one morning without a dependent, you walk home with a dependent to raise.
And they are completely dependent on you in every way. Financially, please keep me alive, don't let me grab knives, because I'm going to do that a lot. Don't let me run in front of cars, that's their favorite thing. And then he left the hospital, and I start maniacally laughing in the back seat. I'm sitting next to my daughter in her car seat, and I'm laughing like a wild person. And my husband's like, what is wrong with you? And I'm like, they just let us drive away with the baby. Do they even know what they did? They didn't even, like, no one even checked our IDs. Like, what are they doing? Just going to go home with her now.
You think to adopt a dog, right? Whoa. You got to ask a lot more.
They want to do a home visit. They want a blood type, the whole thing. You give birth to a baby, and it's see you later. We need this bed now.
Well, it always makes me crazy when it's like, oh, we're not going to let those gay people adopt that baby. I'm like, you never checked anything out about my parents. Yeah, you just decided they were straight. They were qualified. Boom, there
we
you go.
We are suspicious, and we want lots of information. If you would like to have a baby who is already here, already in need, desperately in want of a loving family, but if you have the ability to get knocked up, oh, well,
you're good to go.
Good luck.
Yep. Yep. Bless you for having a baby.
The baby's blood pressure looks fine or whatever. See you later, and please feed it.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, oh, it's just ridiculous. That so much of so many systems are so broken.
I heard my friend say to her kid when they were having a discussion, a disagreement about something, and at one point she said, "This is my first time being a mom." And I'm like, that is so great. Like, what a beautiful response.
Like, you're my first attempt.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I'm trying to figure this out. It's your first time being a kid. It's my first time being a mom. We don't know what each other is doing. You know?
I used to do something silly, like put my daughter's diaper on wrong, or, oh, any number of, like, first-time parent things. And I would look at her and go, you're new, I'm new, it's fine.
We're going to get through this.
We're working this out.
We'll figure that out in the six-month review.
You've been only doing this for 4 days. I've only been doing this for 4 days. I mean, it's like, I think we're doing all right. Yeah, I think it's, there's so many experts. There's so many expert parents. When I get into conversation with other moms, is everybody's just doing the best they can.
Mm-hmm.
None of us were given any actual training about this. We read books based on whether we like to do that or not, whether we're researchy types or not. But there's no quality control for those books. I am a researcher. I read so many books that my Google ads became calls for midwives. I think even the internet was like, lady, chill. There's no written test. But it makes me feel prepared. And you can't really prepare for being a parent, so I think a person should just do whatever makes them feel better. And for me, it was reading and reading and reading. And I read so many books, and a good 70% of them were absolute nonsense.
Oh, wow.
And some of it I could tell before I became a parent was nonsense, and some of it I couldn't, but later on, yeah, that was absolute nonsense. Because literally anyone can write a parenting book.
Right.
And just call it a parenting
book. Well, my gosh. I mean, I've had a lot of experience as a kid, which I could certainly give some parenting advice, but I also realize that when the kid is right in front of you, you know, it's a whole different world,
oh,
you know?
Absolutely. And all of us are experts on our nieces and nephews, and then become a parent and apologize to our brothers and sisters. Like, go, whoa, okay. I barely knew everything there was to know, and now I'm a parent and I realize I know nothing. Absolutely nothing.
It's 24/7 gig is a whole different deal.
Yeah.
So throw some advice if you have any, I'm thinking, you know, like you were saying, the whole kind of going into the teacher, going into the doctor and saying, look, here's kind of my intention with working with you, you know.
Okay.
How do you, like, interview that doctor? Because I'm thinking of this. I'm thinking of the mom who goes in, she's, you know, maybe has a new doctor, and she's trying to use these techniques and, you know, and trying to just do her best at saying, no, really, this is what I want to do. And maybe doing even all the right things, and the doctor's just like, no, I'm the expert here.
Absolutely.
This is why we're going to do this.
Yeah.
And really keeps pushing. And I'm thinking, maybe your kid has an issue that you can't just say, well, I just need to go to a different doctor. I guess in my mind, I would, like, try to find that new doctor when you don't need one, right?
Right, yeah.
But what do you have to maybe help parents approach that? Or what can they do right away to find out, is this physician going to be somebody that I can work with?
Absolutely. I think that's really important. What I've discovered, which I thought was a thing where you could make an appointment to meet a doctor and ask a bunch of questions. I was told to do that by every You're Pregnant website ever, and then started calling pediatrician offices, and they said, that's not a real thing. There's no way to bill that appointment, and so that appointment is not real. And so I was like, oh, okay, what do I do?
Right.
So from there, my initial reaction was to say, okay, well, I am a big believer in reviews. Not that reviews are 100% accurate, but reviews tell you a lot. Sometimes they tell you a lot about the base of people who are participating in something, and sometimes they tell you about the product. But in either way, you come out with more information. And so I went to, what is it called? Doctor...
Like rate your doctor type?
Yeah. There are websites where people can leave feedback about a doctor, and there's a lot of information on there about wait times at the office, about how long it takes to get an appointment when you call, about how helpful the nursing staff is, how they liked the doctor. And you can tell that there are just some people on there who are upset or didn't hear what they wanted to hear, that kind of thing. But from there, I was able to narrow a field of every pediatrician in Duluth, which was an overwhelming thing, right? I had access to everybody that my insurance covered except for the doctor I had just fired. And then could go through the reviews. Like, if someone takes time to review a doctor in this area, because it's not super common, you know that they felt strongly about whatever they were going to say. And so I liked what I was hearing about a good 5, and then picked the location that consistently got the best reviews, right? And so when I just made an appointment, just made my child's next appointment with her, and then went in like it was a job interview for me. I think that's the most important thing, because you can't control what they're going to say about themselves, what they're going to be comfortable answering about their own style. You make an appointment to see a doctor, you start asking them, well, how do you feel about this, and what's your policy on this, and what's your style like this? You're going to fluster a lot of people who are going to be really caught off guard by your questions. And so my approach was, what I can do is tell you about me. It's like, okay, I just had to fire my daughter's doctor because she was not interested in what I had to say. She was not interested in my input, on my expertise on my daughter, on the research that I had done, and what I was and was not comfortable with. She was rigid in her idea that her idea was the best, and she was going to tell me what to do for Fiona, and I was just going to say yes. And I don't work that way. I like to be very informed. I will come in with my own ideas and questions. I will have done some research. I'm not always going to like what you suggest. I'm going to ask you for alternatives or just tell you no. I am Fiona's bouncer, bodyguard, mom, nurse, teacher, everything. I am all of those things. And so you will go through me to get to her because she was 2 turning 3 when we, the new doctor. And she can't talk. And so I will do all of the talking. If you have a question, ask me. If you have a concern, talk to me. And I'm bossy. But I absolutely have respect for you and what you do and all this. And I just laid myself out. This is what you can expect from me. How does that work for you? And I tell you what, she was super caught off guard by our conversation. Enabled her to say, okay, so here's my style as a doctor. Here's my philosophy. I like what I'm hearing. I like that you are fighting for your kid. I like that you are in charge and you do your research and you want to know. And if I suggest something you don't like, you're going to let me know and you're going to work with me to find a common solution. And she's like, these are the things I heard that I thought were awesome. And I think we can do this. And it was great because it had just immediately, a person can tell you what you want to hear, but I'm a really bossy, you know it all mom, and you're going to have to convince me that what you're saying is the right thing. You'll see on their face in a second if they are the doctor who says, ooh, nope, because I have. And we have passed on several specialists because I got in their office with them, and within 5 minutes, I got up and shook their hand, thanked them for their time, and told them this was absolutely not going to work. So start with you. Mm-hmm. You can say, I get really nervous and uncomfortable with all of this, and I'm going to maybe not say it in person, but I'm going to, can I email you later with a concern, or I have a really hard time coming up with all my questions in the moment. Is there a way I can get them to you later? Or I feel really strongly about vaccinations, or I feel really strongly about medications. Some parents feel really strongly about no psychiatric drugs being recommended, required, or any of that kind of thing. So you can kind of come in with your style. That's what you can control. That's what you can give them a full picture of you, because I don't think you'll have a difficult time reading their response to that. They're going to go, oh, right, this mom is in it, and she's invested, and she's a fighter, and that's awesome. Or you're going to go, oh, this mom is in it, and she's invested, and she's a fighter, and she sounds like a complete pain. You're going to see it, and you're going to know whether you guys are a good fit or not. But don't be afraid to be really honest about yourself, because you can pretend that I'm so relaxed and groovy, and I'm a mama bear. I'm a little intimidating sometimes. I'm super bossy, and I will always tell you if I don't like something. And everybody likes knowing what to expect. It makes everybody more calm. It just puts us all on the same page. There's no mystery there. They know exactly what they're getting. And then the next time I go in, They know. I put it all out on the table. There's no right. re-explaining myself. There's no, I have to be strong. I walk in, yes, we remember. You know, your pediatrician has nurses that work with them. You're going to see those ladies a lot. They're going to see you coming and remember what you said. And right. even if you didn't say all of those same words, even if you just said whatever it is you're nervous about, or whatever you're hopeful for, or I really need to be able to ask you 19 questions if I have 19 questions. I really need to be able to know what's going on to feel comfortable. Whatever it is, it's already on the table and they already know that about you. You don't feel like every single time you go in you have to reintroduce that concept mm-hmm. or reprove yourself, or you know, oh, I have to be the difficult mom again. If you're the difficult mom and you've laid it out on the table, they know. And then it's already there. So it's like, okay, here I am. I'm ready to be difficult. Right.
And if there's that much turnover at your clinic and you have to re-explain yourself every time, that might be
something else to keep in mind. You have options. But I just think being as honest as possible up front, it makes it easier on them and easier on you. Why take 7 appointments to find out that when they say something, they mean it? And if you say no, then this is a problem for us, or mm-hmm. we're gonna have to have a conversation about why you don't want to do what's best for your child, or whatever kind of tactics that people have had to deal with.
So when you talked about, if you're willing to share this,
sure.
when you sat with the doctors for the 5 minutes and got up yeah. and said, yeah, no, thank you, what kind of was happening that made you say this isn't going to work?
It's typically around in the sort of special needs world. So a lot of times there's a push immediately to get a clinical diagnosis for your child. They want you to go see the specialist and do whatever battery of tests are involved in ruling out or diagnosing your child with whatever they suspect might be going on. And the reality is that there are pros and cons to early diagnosis, and for a lot of things that can be going on in your child's world, especially neurologically, a lot of things can look like a lot of things. And the need for an early diagnosis is generally a convenience thing. It's generally a paperwork thing. It's generally not the primary reason to do it, typically not for your kid. It's typically for insurance, or it's typically for the school, or whatever. And what you'll find is if you're the type of parent who says, we don't need to go through the diagnosis process right now because I'm not 100% sure what we're looking at yet. If you're the kind of person that says, yeah, we could do that and take the results as this is absolutely my kid. In 3 years, we could find it wasn't correct and we're 3 years down a path in the wrong direction. I find a lot more parents who are like that have acquaintances or family members who were through the special needs system
uh-huh.
and know how often children are misdiagnosed. And sometimes it's completely innocuous and it's not a big deal. It's like, oh, we thought that they had hyperactivity disorder and it turns out they had emotional behavioral disorder. Well, in very small children, the help, the assistance, the treatments, all the stuff for that is very similar. It's a lot about learning how to control yourself and learning how to control your body, and a lot of what your child would have access to is the same. But in some cases, it can be very problematic because your child can get pigeonholed at school. They can get put in the wrong type of learning environment. They can be removed from a traditional classroom, which ultimately was probably not the best thing for them, or kept in a traditional classroom, which was not the best thing for them. And so as Fiona's gotten older, there are ticks in the list of autism spectrum disorder that seem to fit what's going on. There are plenty of ticks on this other side that say it could in fact be something else we're not entirely sure. And so in order to get her assistance through the school, they want a diagnosis in order to keep them in special ed by age 6. And so I said to everyone who was asking, then you can ask me again when she's 6. Mm. I want to give her that time to come into herself, to show me the most complete picture of what she has going on, what her needs are, what her hurdles are. And a lot of the, I wouldn't say treatments, a lot of the assistance that she has available to her is available to her with or without a diagnosis. And so occasionally I've been with doctors who they feel like that's not the right thing to do. There is no reason to wait, that she's overdue for an autism diagnosis, and that basically just that their desire for this information is more important than whether or not I feel like it might be accurate. And that's a no-fly zone with me. I've gone through the pros and cons with all of the professionals that I trust very much, and no one can tell me that there is a hard pro to having her tested at this point, especially because of a lot of neurological stuff has an IQ test component. They're trying to rule out a lot of things, which I understand. I also know that Fiona's ability to demonstrate her intelligence right now is not great, especially to a stranger. Mm. And so I know going in that the results that we would get would not be accurate. You know, it's hard. You're the mom and you know you're biased, but she's intensely intelligent. And from a very small age, I've been able to say, no, Fiona, don't touch that. And she will stop and turn and look at me and walk in the other direction and demonstrate understanding of sentences that other children her age don't even respond to, even without use of her language herself. So I have no qualms about her intelligence level. I pity the world who will have to struggle to keep up with her. But I know that that will be very tricky, because if they cannot understand her level of intelligence, it's going to put a bunch of stuff on the table that we'll then have to wade through. And I will then be in charge of consistently saying, don't look over in this category, because I know as her mother that that's not what's going on here. So it's the fundamental stuff. It's the things as far as, yeah, she's not ready for an ASD screening. It's an involved process. Like a lot of things in the medical world, it's an involved process. And I think it would do her more harm than good mm-hmm. right now. Mm-hmm. And so that for me is a non-negotiable. Mm-hmm. And if a doctor and I ever stick on that, then I know it's a no-go. And then there are a couple of forms of popular treatment for autism that I disagree with. And so anything that I feel is non-negotiable, if the doctor wants to go, oh, but mm-hmm. you haven't heard my pitch for this, then I pretty much get up and go. Because I've done my research and I know where I stand on that. Mm-hmm. And there are things I won't allow. And so, like, the modified behavioral stuff, I just am not. It's just brainwashing, in my opinion, and it's just teaching your child to be a parakeet. And I feel like we don't need to make autistic children more like us. we need to meet them halfway. I think there's nothing wrong with teaching. There's a lot of really awesome stuff in town that happens with teaching autistic kids how to better identify their own emotions, so they can better identify the emotions of their friends, because that's a sticking point with communication a lot.
Yeah.
And if they can learn some of the societal cues that they have a hard time with naturally, they just have an easier time navigating communication with neurotypical people. It's mm-hmm. basically what you call a person who's not autistic or not on the spectrum. And that's great. Give them that skill set, but don't act like being like everybody else fixes you or makes you better. Because I don't think that's true. I think we're like PCs and Macs, right? It's just two different ways to have a computer. And everyone who knows this one really well thinks this one's the best. And everyone who knows this one really well thinks this one's the best. But it's just two different ways to have a computer. We don't understand the autistic computer. It doesn't mean it's not just as strong, sometimes stronger, just as fast, sometimes faster, just as complex, oftentimes more complex. They are as beautifully functioning a machine as we are. We just don't understand their program. But that's it. Right. From my perspective, that's it. So we need to learn how to speak more of their language, and then we need to teach them more of our language. But a lot of the mainstream autism treatment and behavioral modification right now does not agree with my premise. does not agree that we're different computers, thinks that we are the newest Apple, and thinks that autistic children are a very old PC you would find in a library, and they just need a lot of help and a lot of upgrades and a lot of new technology and a lot of paint so immediately we have a fundamental disagreement in how we are viewing the situation. And I believe that's sort of a moral issue as well. So we have a fundamental difference in our viewpoint and in Fiona's value and the value of people on a diverse, you know, neuro spectrum.
Well, it goes back to that. It's easy if we're all doing the same thing. If we all, you know, if we're all robots, it's easier to A, understand, and B, control the other, instead of, you know, going, you know, looking at dolphins or whatever and thinking, I don't understand what all their noises mean, but clearly they mean quite a bit of
stuff. Exactly. And, right? We're not still in the days where we go, look at that idiot dolphin. It doesn't even know how to talk.
Exactly. It's like they probably have a whole communication system that if we could get into, we'd be like,
oh,
holy crap.
And they do. Right? What we've discovered is that dolphins are profoundly intelligent. Exactly. Was it Einstein that said if you judge a fish on its ability to fly, it will believe it's stupid its entire life. And that is where I land in that whole debate. I feel like she's so much more than I am in so many ways that I'm trying to keep up with her. I'm trying to understand how a 4-year-old has a complete nonverbal communication system of her own invention, because she won't sign. She will only communicate nonverbally in ways she has designed, and she can make complete strangers get her food, refill her water, bring her outside. She has people do things for her who afterwards look at me and go, I have no idea how I knew what she wanted. She is masterful.
Whoa.
She's at Jedi levels.
Right,
she just walks up to you and moves your hands and makes a noise and guides your body, and you just, I will make you a sandwich. Of course I will. And then you hand it to her, and afterwards you go, how did I know you wanted a sandwich? How can I look at a child like that and think, oh, you poor thing. I have to fix you. Let me take you to a specialist who will fix you.
Oh my gosh. You've got me under your control.
Exactly. It's like, girl, apparently I'm here to help. So teach me your ways.
Exactly.
I have to literally say to someone, I need you to make me a sandwich. I don't even know how I would get you to make me a sandwich if I can use my words.
So she'd be looking at you going, ugh. Mom,
and she does.
So simple.
The most, I get so much side eye from her, and so much, I cannot believe you don't understand me. She's got these great arms that are just like, oh, you speaking people, you poor things. How do you get by in the world?
Well, you know, that's the thing. If it's the minority and you don't understand what that minority is functioning on. I mean, I'm thinking if the typical person, if everybody was totally blind, right? Mm. And there were a couple people who could see. First of all, we'd say they were taken over by Satan because what is this color thing? And, you know, how? What do you mean the sun is bright? And
or we'd be so ridiculous. Oh, is it green? Is green a real thing?
Exactly.
Oh, this color theory they have.
Exactly. I mean, we would look at them and we would go, they're complete idiots.
Absolutely.
They have no idea. Exactly.
Yes.
And they'd be like, dudes, if you could just see what I could see, you just have no idea. And I'm sure that's what dolphins and
people, right, and Fiona? Yes.
Thinking,
oh, you poor colorblind fools.
If I could bring you up to my level, the world will be a better place.
Exactly. If we could stop looking at special needs children as deficient, if we could see them as a language we don't speak yet or a computer that we do not understand, if we could view it as a puzzle, not because it's missing pieces, thanks Autism Speaks, But as, here's these numbers, and I don't get them, but if I could take the time, I could see this picture clearly. I could get what's happening here. It's not the same as I've got going on here, but that doesn't mean anything about its value.
Right.
It doesn't mean anything about its abilities or its possibilities or capabilities. It's just so... Yeah, that is my fundamental divergence. It's not about anything more than how are we going to help her navigate this world that she was born into,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's not our fault we don't understand her. It's not her fault she cannot reach us yet. It's our job to bridge that gap. How is she going to, what does Fiona in school look like if she never talks? How does she get her needs met as she moves around in the world? What level of independence is possible for her at this stage, when she's a teenager, when she's adult? How does she learn how to navigate relationships with her peers, with her teachers, all of that stuff? That's her job. Not making her into someone else. It's seeing where she needs help, or where she needs assistance, or where she needs a modification, and that's it. So anyone who I allow into her space comes in with their problem solving in. It's like, okay, all right, cool. How is she going to ask the teacher how to go to the bathroom? How is she going to let someone in the room know if she's done with this activity and needs to go do something else? If she's overwhelmed by what's going on? If the classroom is too loud and she can't regulate? If she gets upset with the transition and she can't calm herself down? How is she going to let them know what's going on, and then how are they going to assist her in that problem that she's having? That's who gets to be a part of her team.
Right.
That's who gets to be her doctor. That's who gets to be her special ed para. And that's where we've landed, because it's like, okay, this is what I need.
I can imagine that some of the people that are working with you, be they doctors or teachers, are also probably, they're challenged and probably really appreciate the challenge, because because of your mindset and your approach, and your being able to talk about that allows them to think about their perspective differently and maybe even approach it the way they kind of want to, but systematically haven't, because the system is so overloading.
Absolutely. And a lot of what you're dealing with there are people who are in a system where they want to help kids. They really want to help kids. And in the special ed field especially, they're there, and all of our desire is there and our enthusiasm is there, but so many diagnoses have so few studies to back up their information. And my favorite quote about autism is, if you know one individual with autism, you know one individual with autism, which is so awesome. And because right off the bat, people think they know, if you say my child is autistic, they have a video running in their head. They think they know your kid. First of all, they think your kid's male. And they think your kid is screaming and throwing things, has a hard time regulating their emotions, gets violent, or has outbursts. They knew a child at some point with autism in the loudest way, right? A child who is very affected by their autism. And that's immediately, so they're like, okay, yeah, no, I remember Freddie from the neighborhood, so no, I totally know what you're saying. And it's like, first of all, absolutely not. Spectrum is in the diagnosis. It is an entire awesome array of wildly diverse people with wildly diverse hurdles to overcome, behaviors, with ways that it shows up in their world, ways that it affects their speech or their communication or their sensory processing. It looks a lot of different ways. I have a number of female friends who have autism disorders, diagnoses, and not a one of them were diagnosed before middle school.
Oh, wow.
I reached out to a lot of them when I started going, okay, I think that autism treatments and autism services are going to be the best thing for my daughter. What worked for you? What worked really well for you when you were little? What did you struggle with? And all of them said, man, I wish I had been offered services at her age. It didn't even occur to anyone that I could be autistic until I was in middle school. And part of that is the prejudice against the way that autism shows up in girls. It's not the same list of behaviors typically.
Okay.
So a lot of the more, like, the outbursts and the emotional regulation and that kind of stuff just shows up louder in boys. You know, not across the board, but a lot of stuff shows up louder in boys. We also allow boys to be louder. So, right, how much of that is science and how much of that is boys will be boys and girls be quieter, because that's what we like in girls. And so they were diagnosed with ADHD or hyperactivity disorder or these other sort of things to explain social anxiety disorders, ways to explain how they were different that where no one even thought for a second about autism. Autism Speaks has used blue as the autism color because of that, right? Because it used to be thought of as a very male diagnosis. They lighted up blue for autism, which is super archaic and backwards in its thinking, because those of us with daughters who might be on the spectrum are going, yeah, this is part of the reason that people don't, it doesn't occur to them that our daughters could be autistic and could be having some of those neurological issues, could be struggling in those neurological ways and could really use the help. And it would help if people thought about it as something that afflicts boys and girls.
Which brings a question to my mind.
Okay.
Are there in Duluth, like for somebody who has a kid with special needs of maybe various types?
Okay.
Are there resources for parents to gather, communicate, to share ideas, stories, solutions, approaches with each other, support?
I think I've not come across all of what Duluth has to offer. Because my child's nonverbal, my needs were sort of specific. And a lot of the groups that I was told about, I knew I was probably going to be the only one in the room that had my specific situation. I can tell you that the Scottish Rite Clinic downtown here has a wonderful support group for parents called Parent Autism Group. And it's not a support group. It's an educational group.
Oh.
Where they take us through topics like navigating the school system. They walked us through our children's individualized education plans, their IEPs, which is what you get when you enter the special ed program. They've talked us through emotional issues, emotional regulation issues. They do 5 or 6 week sessions where we meet every Tuesday and for an hour, and they just give us so much information to help advocate on behalf of our children. Information about the brain and the way that autistic children's brains sometimes struggle to perform in the same way as neurotypical children's brains, what things their brains underproduce or overproduce, the ways that that can manifest in their behavior. They'll say, oh, if your child has a hard time sleeping, this can be one of the reasons why. This can be something that you can do about it, which was profoundly helpful information for me. It's completely free. All you have to do is call and register. And if you call them, they'll let you know what's coming up next and what topics it covers. And that, like I said, that meets once a week. That's really great. I know that through a lot of the schools, there are parent groups where the parents get together periodically. The parents of children who are in the special needs program at that school will get together. I'm trying to connect with the one at Lester Park where my daughter goes to school, because that sounds really awesome. But yeah, you just kind of have to ask around. Your doctor's office is a really great resource. The school itself is a really great resource, because typically a parent will run and keep that group going, but they will have all of the information on it.
Okay.
Who they are and where, when and where they meet, and then the contact person for them. But my most helpful has been the Scottish Rite, because they're a speech, sort of a speech center, and then they have a lot of focus on autistic children, so they have a lot of autism-specific programming. But that's been really helpful for me, and there's been no issue with the fact that she's not actually diagnosed as on the spectrum.
Oh, nice.
I came in with I have a suspicion, and that could be happening, or it could be something else, and she's actually going to start receiving services next month there, some speech services, which I'm super pumped about. But that parent group has been just a goldmine for me. And they have just a couple of the specialists there have just wealths of information, things to try, sensory activities to try, or like ways to transition from home to the doctor's office, or just things like real life applicable stuff that's been endlessly helpful. And then they've brought in physical therapists and musical therapists for us to ask questions to, different treatments we may not even have known about. Or, you know, you want to ask questions, but you're intimidated to just show up at their office and ask a bunch of questions and then not sign your kid up, or that kind of stuff. So that's been super helpful for my particular situation.
Nice.
Because then also you're sitting next to other parents whose kids, you know, they vary in age and they vary in their experience. But sometimes it's nice to just say something out loud of, oh, we're having such a problem with this right now, and have three parents look at you and nod and say, that's really hard when they're three, they do get past it, or my kid did that exact same thing and this is what we did to help, or even a year later it was so much easier, and you just think, okay, not alone. And we give each other ideas, we give each other doctor recommendations. Someone will say, this neurologist was awful, and we had a terrible experience with them, so watch out for this guy. And we all take notes and we say, oh, I found the best dentist, or this doctor's office has a special room where the kids can go where it's not so chaotic. And sometimes the room is crowded and sometimes the sessions are so sparse. And I think it's free, it's incredible amount of information. They are just a phenomenal center. And I just think if you work with a kid, if it's your sibling, if any, you don't even have to be a parent to be in the group.
Oh, wow.
There are some educators there. There are some nice people who seem like they are part-time caregivers to autistic kids. It's just like, we have this information. We want to give you this information. So here it is. And cool. And I could not believe it was free. Wow. After the first session, I was like, you could have charged me $90. I still would have come. And I would still come back. So yeah, they are my biggest wholehearted recommendation. I've learned just an astronomical amount from them.
Anything else? Any other pieces of advice you can toss the way of any parent, be they special needs kids or just any kid?
There is just, I think there's so much information available to us. And, you know, I come across a lot of it via the internet because it's so accessible. But what I want to stress, and why I wanted to come and talk to you today, is because I am a mom with no specialist after my name. I'm not here because I'm an educator or I'm a doctor or I'm a specialist or I've received special training or any of that. All of the information I have and every way I have learned to advocate for my children comes from just a desire to be their advocate and someone who is in their corner and will always fight for them. That I have a desire to do the best I can for my kids. And so if someone at the doctor's office thought, okay, well, she's not talking, it could be this, this, or this, I wrote those things down. I went and read every single thing I could about it. I got books on sensory processing disorders because I didn't know what that meant. I got books on autism spectrum disorder. I read everything I could read. There's so many great online articles. There are forums online where there will be other parents like you who want to know things.
I think the key here is don't take what I'm saying and think, oh, sure, she feels that way because, right, she's walking into these spaces with a level of expertise or authority that someone else has to recognize. Because you don't need any of that to advocate for your kid. It's about knowing what's best for your kid. It's about the fact that you are your child's advocate because you're it. If you don't do it, someone else will do the job, but they won't do it in the same way that you can, and they don't love your child like you do. All of it just comes from desire and enthusiasm and research. And that's it.
So here begins our five little snippets, and I'll just introduce them very briefly. The first one is about practicing kind of our muscle memory on gaining our self-confidence and being assertive. The second one talks about being okay, asking more questions. The third one is about options and seeking, and again, reminding us to ask about what might be available, so we know as much as we can going into a situation. The third one, we talked a lot about how to talk to doctors, professionals, etc., when we're trying to advocate for ourselves or our kid. This is just an important continuation about being assertive in those situations. And the last piece, Natalie talks about modeling, and this is something that comes up in groups that I facilitate of many different kinds, and I think it's something that we don't always think about until we think about it.
Practice. Yeah. Practice and faking it. You know, right. Yes, I am fighting for myself, and I am not nervous about this at all.
Well, and you have, you know, a little person to practice, and then it probably just comes a little more naturally.
Exactly. You know. And I hope the moms listening hear that too. Every time you practice, it's easier and you get better at it.
Right.
Every time it's less scary until you find you're just that mom.
Right.
Who goes, nope.
And that muscle memory. You get the muscle memory, yeah. And that muscle gets worked.
When it works, right? So the first time you say to your doctor, I'm not comfortable with that. And the doctor goes, oh, of course. Let's walk through some options. It's like, oh, all right then.
Whoa, wait a minute. Whoa, what's that?
You're the boss.
Respecting me?
Yeah, exactly. What? You know, wow. So then the next time it's a different doctor or in a different situation, it's like, no, I can do this. No, I did this.
Right. This other person respected me. Exactly. I must be able to do this.
Exactly. Yeah. Positive feedback. Yes. Really important.
Yeah. Well, and I think another thing that you're touching on with that, too, is the feeling even empowered to speak your mind, to ask the question.
Right.
That many people don't have, or you maybe even don't even have that question formulated in your head, and then if you leave the situation, you feel stupid for calling and asking about that question.
Shit. Or you agreed to it in the moment because you were uncomfortable, and you don't feel comfortable going back going, yeah, I changed my mind, I don't want to do that.
Right, or I don't even understand why we're doing this.
Exactly. Yeah. Why on earth would I send her to preschool right now? What is she going to get out of preschool right now? Yeah,
right. Totally. And I think that's so much of a piece of it, too, is finding, helping cultivate that something within yourself and being able to say, I'm just going to call and ask this question, and I'm going to say, I don't know, maybe I'm an idiot for asking this question, but you know what? This is really bugging me and I have a question.
Yeah, exactly. And I will feel better knowing that I did this, that I feel this is the right thing. You ask the question. You have that gut check moment of, that sounds like the wrong thing to say, you know, the wrong thing to do, or I don't know about all that. You say that out loud. And then you allow the other person the ability to go, okay, well, there are options here.
Right.
I'm going to go be a bitch in my doctor's office because that will get me better care.
Well, right. And it's learning how to do that with, like, being able to be a bitch without being a bitch. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. Like, well, right. Because a lot of people end up coming way too hard. Right. And going way too hard because we don't know what else to do. And if you're keyed up about it and you're anxious about it, you're going to be all aggressive and all that kind of stuff. To just understand that you are the boss. And so, yeah, I don't have to shout. Right. The doctor says, well, whatever, and I can interrupt her and go, oh, I'm not comfortable with that. Can we talk about some other options? Right. As calmly and civilly as that, and then she's left to sit to talk through some options with me or have some sort of fit over what I just said. But that's all of that is her choice. Mm-hmm. And so I never raise my voice. I never swear at anybody. I mean, it's just like, this is what it is. This is the last word.
Right.
So she needs to say, but this is the last word. And that takes confidence. Mm-hmm. It takes confidence that I'm allowed to do that, that I don't legally have to listen to the doctor, all kinds of stuff where we don't even think about it, but we don't know. And I think every single time your child sees you stand up for their body autonomy, it's practice. And then when they get to be the age, they can do it. Mm-hmm. And a child who can say, you can't do that to me because it makes me uncomfortable, is a safer child. It's just going to be a safer child. And you're letting them out into the world armed.
Yeah. Well, they get to sort of stick up for themselves before they have to stick up for themselves.
Yeah. And they know that they're worth it. And
exactly.
They know that, that that's the right thing to do because they've been watching you do it for them their entire life.
Right.
It's like, no, I get to decide. Mom always said that. Mom always stopped them. I get to decide. And then they know that that makes them more comfortable doing it for themselves, which is really important, especially these days.
Right. Yeah. No kidding.
Yeah. It's just about modeling. My whole, if I had like a motto or whatever, it would be about modeling. That kids are, they're such great BS detectors. Your children, if you have children, if there are children in your life, they know the list. What mom says, what mom does. They know the list. She says, we always have to say please and thank you. She never says please and thank you. It's the show your kids what you value by doing it. And I want my daughter, especially in a world where it's very difficult to be a woman, she's always going to be short. That's my fault too. And that will not help her. And she may or may not be verbal. So I want her to feel like she can walk into any room. She has as much value as anybody else. She can speak her mind. She can stand her ground. She can put boundaries down with people and maintain those boundaries and just feel a really strong sense of self. And I feel I can better give that to her with my actions than my words. Mm-hmm. I'll say, girl, you stop anybody from doing anything that makes you uncomfortable. But not just that. Watch me do it. Watch me stop a stranger from touching you in the grocery store. Watch me stop your doctor from doing something I'm uncomfortable with. Watch me take your teacher to task for failing to protect you in her classroom. Whatever it is.
Right.
I will say it to you, but here's how I demonstrate that I mean it.
And most of us need that. We need to see it in action. We need to see the language used. We need to see how it really works, how it really feels to go forth and do that. That makes perfect sense.
Exactly.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you had a great time and got some great information and some ideas that you might be able to take and integrate into your own world in your own way. I encourage you to check out the rest of the podcasts at wellnessrenpodcast.com. You can also find me on iTunes at Wellness Renaissance Podcast. Sign up for email notifications at wellnessrenpodcast.com, where we just send you an email each time a new episode comes out. It gives you the title, gives you the information about it, and a link right to it so you can listen super easy on the website. Thank you so very much to everybody who shares the podcast and the emails around getting this information out to people who might find it helpful and useful. If you like what you hear in the podcast and you feel called to support this in any way, first of all, sharing is a beautiful thing. It's very helpful, and thank you. Thank you very much. You can also find your way to become a patron on patreon.com. Right on the website, big red button where you can support with tiny little payments or big ones, your choice, not going to turn those down, each month. That type of support is, of course, amazing and wonderful and helps keep this going. If you are an Amazon shopper and you are willing to take a couple extra clicks, you can go to the website, click the Support the Podcast page, and you're going to find a bunch of links on there. Click on anything. You don't have to buy anything that you do click on, but whatever you do purchase in that shopping trip that day, a tiny little portion of your purchase, no extra charge to you, goes into a little bucket to support the podcast. So thank you so much to those who have done that as well. Until next time, may you continue to find the pieces that fit into your very complex health and wellness puzzle. Take care.